Okay, thank you. Yeah, we are going to talk in English, but none of us is native English speaker, so thank you. We will do it in steenkolen English, and you're welcome to do the same if you have remarks or questions later, after the three introductions. This is Domela Nieuwenhuis, for those who don't come from Holland, or many who do also don't really know what this guy is. There's a big statue of him at the Westerpark, if you go there. I was told the statue was made by a communist, so but we have a historian here. He can explain what is the truth about it. But anyhow, Holland has a tradition, maybe it doesn't show so much anymore, a big tradition of anarchist organizations, and the big moment of anarchism in Holland was a long time ago, but Domela Nieuwenhuis played an important role in creating a movement together with others, of course. And we are from Real World Economics. It's a small group of economists and activists, and we started a few years ago together with CREA to organize evenings about economic issues, I have to say, from a critical viewpoint. And we really wanted to talk about anarchism because we see anarchists popping up everywhere in struggles, first in the so-called anti-globalization movement, and now in struggles against privatization or austerity measures. And we want to know what the ideas are of these activists and these movements, what idea they have about economy, because one of the things that we know about anarchists is that they have something against the state, which is one of the main differences with Marxist currents. And the state plays an important role at this moment in the solutions for the crisis. This is one of the debates that we will have tonight, I think. So that's why we asked three people to enlighten us. And which hopefully will happen. The first hour we will have three introductions. It will be first Bert Altena, historian from Erasmus University in Rotterdam. He will give a longer introduction on the history of anarchist currents and their theories. Then Dennis will give an example of one movement or one group or one person, maybe even in Holland, Albert de Jong. He will explain that later. And Angela, from the viewpoint of the differences between Marxism and anarchism, and you were also present and you did research for a conference on anarchist economics a few months ago at the University of Coventry.
Warwick.
In Coventry, or
yeah,
okay. So yeah, after that, if anything is still unclear, you can add it, or we can have a debate, or ask questions. Then of course, what is anarchism? It's impossible to answer that question because it's even not clear when it really started. Many people said it was with Proudhon in 1840s, and since then it mushroomed into all kind of different organizations and groups and currents. So I just took a definition that I like the most, and it's from Rudolf Rocker. If this works, it doesn't.
F5
here. In opposition to the image that we get from media that anarchists are crazy people mostly with masks on that like to beat up policemen or politicians and throw bombs around, it is what Rudolf Rocker calls a definite intellectual current of social thought whose adherents advocate the abolition of economic monopolies and of all political and social coercive institutions within society. So this is what they are against. But then he also adds, in place of the capitalist economic order, anarchists would have a free association of all productive forces based upon cooperative labor, which would have for its sole purpose the satisfying of the necessary requirements of every member of society. Which sounds pretty good. But then Rudolf Rocker is also known for having said, I'm an anarchist not because I believe anarchism is the final goal, but because there is no such thing as a final goal. So then we can start all over again. Oh yeah, and for those who are more into the Marxist thinking, I brought from you from J. Stalin, Anarchismus oder Sozialismus from 1907. So if there's any debate about what they think about anarchists, we can study the classics. And now, Bert.
Kijk, hoe doen we dat?
Jij mag... Oh ja, je kan ook.
F5, hoeveel moet ik doen precies?
Oh, sorry. Ik moet eerst escape doen.
Escape.
Onderaan bij PowerPoint. Oké, ladies and gentlemen. I must say this is a rather ambitious title for something I really don't know much about. It's about the theory of anarchism, and I'm an historian of anarchism, but not a theorist. And it's about anarchism and economy, and I'm not an economist. So I think I will enlighten you with a very small light, and I hope it nevertheless will be fruitful. You just heard the definition of anarchism by Rudolf Rocker, one of the leading revolutionary syndicalists of the first half of the 20th century. And I think what he also meant was that anarchism is a movement which strives at natural harmony. Individual freedom, individual associations are the most natural way of living together. And it's also an harmonious idea. And that's a very romantic goal anarchists usually have. Now, through the history of anarchism and anarchist thought, I think you've got two currents which at times are floating through each other, but not always, and you can discern them. The first one is individualism. Every anarchist is very keen on his individualist autonomy, and if you would have to tell to Dutch people what is anarchism, I would always say it's self-beheersing, because self-beheersing in Dutch means autonomy, but also that you don't want to govern somebody else. And that basically is what anarchism is about. It's not about obedience or anti-state. Anarchists are anti-state because they are anti-obedience if they don't want to be obedient. The other current is what I would call for tonight free coordination. That is, there are lots of anarchists who say, okay, your individualism is okay, but an individual is only an individual in relation to the other, to the society as a whole. And we should somehow coordinate things, and especially in the economy. You found it back in one of the definitions of Rudolf Rocker also, Freie Assoziation. That's the very basic idea which both of them start from the 19th century. And I would like to draw your attention to this nice man. It's a picture by his friend Gustave Courbet. It's, of course, Proudhon with his two children. I think one of the children was dead for already 3-4 years, and Courbet has painted this picture as a sort of memory of the happy family the Proudhon family once was. Proudhon died in 1864, so he's early 19th century. And there are people who say, okay, Proudhon gave us the word anarchie, but you couldn't really count him as a member of the anarchist movement, like Lucien van der Walte last year has maintained. But also because other people say the anarchist movement as such starts only in discussion with the Marxists during the First International, so from 1864 onwards. Nevertheless, Proudhon is very important as a thinker and theorist in himself. He has written a lot, and it's in the most beautiful French you can read. There goes one line, I think, from Proudhon, the French of Proudhon to the French of Jules Vallès and the French of Céline. They are all in the same sort of writing. They can be very angry, and then it's very funny too. Proudhon, in one of his major books on the revolution in the 19th century, has said, okay, we need to reorganize the economy. And it should be an economy based on free exchange between producers on the basis of contracts. He thinks contracts between various economic actors are very important, much more important than the state, which should be done away with anyway. And he says, these economic actors only can act on the basis of private property. So he's very much pro-private property. And he says, contracts replace state interference. So you don't need the state because people themselves organize their economic behavior and the rules which rule economic life. Producers can be, of course, the journeymen who filled Paris in the times of Proudhon. But he says there are also, of course, industries, and they should be organized as associations of workers, of producers. And so the producers in the economy can also be groups of producers who, on a very basic democratic way, organize their production and take the decisions they need to take. Very important is, and very with a high actuality, is that credit should be free of interest, he says. And it's also so the fact that he says, after a while, credit shouldn't have any value anymore. So he's very much against usury by banks and those kinds of things. The whole problem is if you organize the economy on the basis of contracts, how do you evaluate what you produce? Do you evaluate it by the amount of work which has gone into the product? What should we take? Do we go for barter? Is that economically feasible if you have a large economy? Proudhon doesn't tell us much about that. And what is very interesting by Proudhon, and which is maybe has a very important root in anarchist thought too, is that inequality in itself is not bad. People should be equal as to what they could do, but they are inherently unequal. And Proudhon augments this argument with the idea that inequality of income is very nice too. He's very pedantic about that. You shouldn't have trouble with that. The other side is the organizationists, the coordinators, and well, they start really during the first international in the debate with the Marxists. There, Bakunin, for instance, was a collectivist, which means that he thought of trade unions as fighting actors, but that he also thought people should have private property, but not all property should be private, and should be property which should be owned by society groups, whatever comes up after the big bang of the big revolution, when the destructive act is a creative one. The most important theorist of the coordinating anarchists is, of course, Kropotkin, who has written a lot about the revolution. How should you do a revolution? What are the priorities in the conquest of bread, for instance? He has thought a lot about it, and he also is a propagandist for communal organization of economies. The other one, which I would like to mention, is Christian Cornelissen, a Dutch revolutionary syndicalist. You see him here, sitting here. That's very early in the 1890s, here in Amsterdam, near the where we're now the where the Koopmansbeurs is. They had the editing office of Recht voor Allen, the revolutionary newspaper of the Dutch socialists. And Cornelissen was one of the editors of the paper. And Cornelissen has developed into a very important revolutionary syndicalist theorist. What did he say? He says, and very early, normally people say, okay, revolutionary syndicalism, which basically is what you read here. Trade unions are the fighting cells during capitalism, but they are the organizing cells of the production in the future anarchist economy. That idea is pronounced, proposed by Cornelissen already in the 1880s, late 1880s, and people who say, well, revolutionary syndicalism is French import, are completely wrong. You find this idea you find in Germany in the 1880s, in the Netherlands. Domela Niemenhuis in 1881 says already the trade unions should fight against the capitalists to free the worker of the wage relationship. And in 1885, the Dutch socialist movement makes as its basis the trade unions. So they were very early proponents of revolutionary syndicalism. But Cornelissen went on beyond that, and he has written a lot of theoretical books on the theory of value, and five massive volumes on economic theories, which he has written during the 1930s. So he's a very productive and a very interesting man, and I hope once my friend Tom of Edmund will show why he is very interesting. According to Cornelissen, he writes that to Domela Niemenhuis in 1889, is the trade unions will organize the production after the revolution. And this whole line of thinking is very Marxist in inspiration, because Domela Niemenhuis wrote down his ideas after having read, at least he said, Marx's Capital, Part 1. I think he mostly read Chapter 26 about Dutch colonialism. But anyway, he said he read it, and he had the gist of it, at least Marx said he had got the gist of the book. And one of his ideas was that if the economy rules the world, if economy rules politics, you shouldn't change society by changing the political power positions, but you should change the economic power positions. So that's why the Dutch socialists call themselves an economic party. They were fighting an economic struggle. And that idea of Marxism also binds the anarchist thought to the working class, whereas, for instance, Kropotkin or others thought of humanity as a whole, and Domela Nieuwenhuis eventually did as well. And that's one of the discussions you get in the early years of the 20th century between pure syndicalists and anarchists. The anarchists say, "Okay, we don't want to have the workers as bosses now. Now the whole of humanity should be on a higher level." So making the anarchist movement a labor movement is not a good way forward. During the 1920s, Cornelissen, who was a very keen analyst of developments within capitalism, Cornelissen concludes, big companies should be run by workers' councils, that's very important. And markets should be replaced by some sort of coordination between whatever economic actors you could think of, but primarily Cornelissen thought of production associations or workers' councils big enterprises. He said you can't build trains, for instance, within a small workshop. That's not possible. It is intrinsically a very large enterprise, and you have to find solutions for that. On the individualist side, people are very quiet until the 1970s, when you get Murray Rothbard, and he develops what he calls, they are called anarcho-capitalists. And Murray Rothbard, as is well known, was he thought very high of Friedrich von Hayek, for instance. And he was a spokesman of the ultra-right Manchester liberal American capitalists. That didn't these anarcho-capitalists very much good. There is just 2-3 months ago, a book has been published about anarcho-capitalism, and the pure and simple anarchists are very angry about it, that it was published by Autonomedia, which should be a little bit anti-capitalist, at least, they say. Yeah, anarcho-capitalists say, okay, state intervention, there we have Proudhon again, is the cause of the malfunction of markets. So we should do away with state intervention and with all kinds of, at least with state interference. And we should, economic life should be based on private property of enterprises and so on. That's again a development of Proudhonist thought. And he says, they say, a completely free market will raise the material standard of living. They expect a lot of the market. And if you read them at times, you've got the idea that somehow Adam Smith's invisible hand is leading them to the societal luck they are striving after. They were very pro-capitalist, and that makes lots of anarchists very worrying people. Nowadays, these people call themselves market anarchists. And that's because Murray Rothbard, later in life, has acknowledged that his sharing thoughts and defending the most conservative American entrepreneurs is not leading to anything good. So he renounced that and he said we should be anti-capitalists. And the market anarchists who are publishing today are calling themselves anti-capitalists. And as such, they have crossed the Rubicon from anarcho-capitalism. They still believe in the completely free market, and that does a lot of good things for you. It diffuses equality, they say. As long as the state is not interfering, if the worker, if the laws of the free market are working properly, they will diffuse equality, and they will they allow for not only individual producers as owners of enterprises, but also for associations of producers. On the coordination side, there is a modernization as well, which has mainly been made by Michael Albert, I think, in the United States. He calls his scheme Paracon. He has written several books about it. The latest has the title Paracon and is 600 pages strong. This is Michael Albert. He's running the magnificent website ZNet. You can get every day a commentary if you pay, if you sustain them, and they should be sustained. And sometimes these commentaries are very good, and sometimes they are very clumsy. The idea of Michael Albert basically is that ownership should be democratized and decision making as well. He doesn't want to see within enterprises a class of designers and of coordinators. Now he wants basically, I would say it's a Maoist circulation of competences. He says, well, a doctor should cut up people in the morning and sweep the rooms in the afternoon, and the sweeper should be doing the cutting up, which reminds me to the Great Leap Forward, I think, or whatever. So that doesn't make me happy in a way. His ideas are basically thought on the level of the enterprise. It's about decision-making within the enterprise and democratization of that decision-making. It's not a macroeconomic idea. And I get the definite impression that working in Michael Albert enterprise will take you to a lot of meetings, because everything has to be coordinated, and I don't know how it's done with production then. And what about the market, you would say? What do we do with the market? And I think that's a very problematic point when anarchists are talking about economy, and I think a point which should be which should be analyzed further, and where we really need some ideas. On the one hand, we have the skill of free competition with the market anarchists, who are praising the free market, but a completely free market, which can lead to inequalities, to my mind, but okay. And on the other hand, we have the charybdis of coordination, which would lead to a lot of bureaucracy. The completely free market, for instance, leads to inequality between producers. Okay, says Proudhon, but should we want this? There is even inequality within enterprises. That's not okay with Proudhon, but one of the authors in this group, David Prichitko, has said, okay, we could do something as Michael Albert is proposing. How do you have a free market so that there won't be any overproduction, there won't be crisis as a result of that? And isn't there a tendency in the free market, in the completely free market, that very nasty costs like the environment or savings for pension schemes and so on, that they are not cut? We have some examples from the communist planned economies. Coordination can lead to an overkill of deliberations, I think, to a lot of bureaucracy and to disappearance of the market. And I think that's very important. We should think about the importance of the market. You have an early and well-known piece by Ludwig von Mises, 1921. I've forgotten the name. Im sozialistischen Gemeinwesen ist das Ende. This is von Mises. It was where he says, "Okay, the market somehow tends to get the good price for the quality, a good relationship between price and quality, and how it's done, I don't know," says von Mises, "but it's very important because if you don't know the real prices, the real value of what you're making and what you're selling, and what you're buying." You can't make any predictions about future economic developments. You can't really evaluate your investments. Another very important aspect of the market is that it's also a mechanism for distribution of knowledge. You find products which look like yours but are better in some ways and are not better in other ways, and that's distribution of knowledge, which is important. And how can you keep this alive when you have a completely organized market? Everybody who should want to know anything more, it's not proper to anarchist thinking about the economy and about coordination in the economy, but about planet economies, should read Janos Kornai, a long life Hungarian dissident who already was in sight of the Hungarian repression in 1956 together with Georg Lukács, and who in 1991 has written this magnificent book, The Socialist System, which is a very thorough dissection of the political economy of communism. Kornai is the one who in 1981 coined the term scarcity economy for planned economies. He demonstrated why planned economies, socialist economies, always would lead to scarcities and all kinds of different things. This book is much and more ambitious. It's his complete experience as an economist in Hungary until 1991. He then went to Harvard, being very old already, and I think it's one of the most wonderful economic and political analyses of fully coordinated but very dictatorial, upside-down coordination of the socialist system. So we started with anarchists and we end with liberated communists. Thank you very much.